Virgil Bryson was a free black man who helped register voters in Jackson County after the Civil War in 1868. He was threatened by early versions of the KKK and supported by the Freedmen's Bureau. Although much about Bryson remains unknown, BPR talked with local historians and community members about his story and what we can learn from him today. Elerna Bryson Forney is a native of Jackson County who's now 58. She's looked deeply into her family history, but she's never heard of Virgil Bryson.
I couldn't find anybody that knew anybody named Virgil. I'm trying to get a hold of my uncle. He's 90-something years old. His memory's still pretty good.
Through family research and working on the book When All God's Children Get Together with Cherokee County historian Ann Miller Woodford, Forney has learned a lot about her family tree.
It was interesting, but the ones that really knew the history, some of them really wouldn't even talk because you need to leave skeletons in the closet, you know. I'll say good, bad, or otherwise, that's what made us who we are. But some of the older ones did not get it. They did not mind giving their family tree, but true history, you know, the things that you heard and seeing the things I heard, I couldn't say because I was not there.
Virgil Bryson is mentioned in letters written by Western Freedmen's Bureau representative Lieutenant George Hawley. The Freedmen's Bureau was installed after the Civil War to improve access to food, education, and work for freed black people and others. An office was set up in Asheville in 1866, explains historian Stephen Nash.
For a short time after the Civil War, Hendersonville and Asheville were occupied by United States forces, but then those forces were gone by the end of 1865. And the Freedmen's Bureau comes in slowly because the United States government, especially under Andrew Johnson, Johnson viewed the Freedmen's Bureau as unconstitutional. He believed it was an overreach of federal power, and there was no mechanism put in place when the Bureau was created to pay for it. It was only supposed to survive for the duration of the war and 1 year after.
In 1860, before the Civil War, there were almost 13,000 people in Buncombe County. About 16% of the population was black. That includes about 2,000 enslaved people and 100 free people. The numbers vary across Western North Carolina's other counties, from 28% black in Burke County to 3.7% in Watauga County. Nash explains after the Civil War, Western North Carolina had few roads and the railroad into Asheville wasn't built yet.
I think that that's one of the biggest problems that the United States military and the Freedmen's Bureau experienced in Appalachia after the war was the absence of roads. In the case of Western North Carolina, the absence of a railroad meant that you have this sort of very small military presence, basically one cavalry regiment and an infantry unit. And they're responsible for everything Morganton and West.
In 1867, a bureau was set up in Macon County in Franklin to cover the region west of Asheville. This was Lieutenant George Hawley's office.
The bureau, particularly in the areas where there's no real good roads and communication networks, they're almost on an island. And they have to adapt to the situation that they find locally. And when Hawley came to Macon County, he worked to try to help African Americans establish themselves as best as he could. And it was not easy. There was violence and pushback in that district.
Local historian Barbara McCray researched Hawley's work in Franklin too. McCray passed away in March 2021. She spoke with BPR in February.
One of the first things he had to do was to get orders for an office furniture, for a desk and a table and some chairs. Very bare bones.
Hawley's letters are part of the Smithsonian Museum's digitized records of the Freedmen's Bureau. The letters are available online and detail the needs of community members, such as efforts to organize schools for black students. Hawley also reports violence.
The stirrings of what would become the KKK over there, especially in the Webster area. And some of the people that he was involved with, like Virgil Bryson is a former slave. He was a freedman. And he was attacked. He had come to Hawley's attention. Apparently they were appointing people to register black people to vote, black men. and also as inspectors of the elections to make sure that nothing went wrong. And this upset some of the more rabid white people.
McCrae is referring to the time before the 1868 election when black men were able to register to vote before the passage of the 15th Amendment. McCrae, who loved to read through old census documents, said there aren't clear numbers for black people in the area during this time.
That decade was so traumatic, so turbulent. There was so much movement. You know, there was the war, and then there was trying to figure out what to do after the war.
Virgil Bryson was appointed to register those men to vote, but Bryson and people close to him were repeatedly assaulted and harassed, according to Holly's letters. Here's one example in 1868. Holly writes, "State's outrages perpetuated on Virgil Bryson, freedman, living near Webster, Jackson County, by John Allison and William Bumgarner. The former carried off his gun and threatened his life, and the latter assaulted him and took away his horse."
Poor Lieutenant Holly had a time because, I mean, one man could not possibly deal with four highly placed, prominent white men in Jackson County. They were never charged by any civil authority. And Bumgarner himself was a former sheriff. And there just was nothing that Holly could do except make reports.
Holly also reported a potential lynching in Jackson County that he could not prove, of a black man named Henry Matthews. Barbara McCrae dug into these stories and tried to track Virgil Bryson's genealogy. McCrae said in her research she found Bryson was the child of a man named Peter Gray. When he was freed, he changed his name to Bryson. While McCrae wasn't able to learn everything about Bryson, the Women's History Trail in Macon County is organizing a library of her research so that scholars will be able to pick up where McCrae left off. The people and events reported by Lieutenant George Holly are still felt today. The names remain local. Bryson, Allison, and Bumgarner can be found on street signs across the region. And voting rights continue to need protection. Eleanor Bryson Forney found other twists and turns in her family genealogy research.
For instance, like there's supposedly two sets of Brysons in silver, black Brysons. There's a darker side and a lighter side. You know what that means, you know. But then when I went through the death records at the courthouse, there was two David Brysons who had two women pregnant at the same time, and both of those women named their sons David. You know, and once I brought that up, everybody clamped down. You know, everybody clamped down quickly on both sides. And I am curious to know more about this man myself. And I pray and hope I can find somebody that knows and that us maybe even can. My cousin, she did our family tree, and she says there's one of our grandfather's brothers, our great-grandfather's, and she says she could never find the. It was always said they had seven children. He had seven children by two wives, but she could never find the names of any of them. And some of them, it was said through the family that they had passed as white, so they lived their life as such. You know what I mean?
Overall, Forney feels not enough people know about the history of black people in Western North Carolina, from slavery to local civil rights efforts. She recalls a gathering to talk about Jackson County history where people said there were never any racial issues in the county.
I had to shut it down. I said, I'm through. Because they told me that in Silver, you did not know that stuff like that was going on. You know, because Silver was okay. Silver was fine. And it was okay, you know, for them to call Mr. Jim, Nigger Jim, it was okay. For people to walk miles and miles to clean their house and take care of their children when their children are at home and this and that. But that, you know, you didn't know that civil rights stuff was happening based on silver.
Forney says she believes the community is closed off in a way because it is safer. During the time of the Freedmen's Bureau, early members of the Ku Klux Klan attacked people like Virgil Bryson in order to stop him from registering others to vote. In 1868, their efforts did not work. Stephen Nash says that Lieutenant Holly and Virgil Bryson's work registering black men to vote, and others like them across the state, is what won the election for Republicans.
He got involved, as the Bureau did, in helping to create the boards of registration for voters in 1867 and 68, when black men were allowed to vote for the first time, even before the 15th Amendment. They were registered to vote in 1867, and then they voted in the state elections of 1868, which swung the state to the Republican Party.
The results convinced national policymakers that Reconstruction had succeeded and prompted the closure of the Freedmen's Bureau outposts in the mountains, taking away a line of defense for black people. For a while, the government held and black rights expanded. In part of North Carolina, a fusion government of populist and Republican parties led black men to be elected into positions of power. Here's Stephen Nash again.
African Americans continue to sort of play a role somewhat through the 1880s. And then in the 1890s, you get a whole another crazy North Carolina electoral cycle with Republican and populist fusion, which brings African Americans back into the heart of the debate, which then helps to set up the things that come with Wilmington, and that's part of a sort of statewide cycle of violence, is geared against African Americans and a result of the Republican fusion and drifts towards disfranchisement.
Nash says it's complicated, but the changing political landscape during the 1870s ultimately led to another rise of violence and voter suppression in the state, which culminated in 1898. There was the Wilmington Massacre that year, during which as many as 250 people were killed, as well as incidents in the mountains on the other side of North Carolina. The Ku Klux Klan and other paramilitary groups like the Red Shirts began a campaign of violence to deter black people from voting. In Franklin, this resulted in the lynching of Mitchell Mosley, according to local historians.
The violence in Reconstruction in that period is inherently political, but a lot of local historians seem to want it not to be. And I'm painting with a broad brush, but that is sort of an observation that I've had that I find quite interesting.
In 1898, the racist groups were successful in destroying the rights that had been won by black politicians and community leaders, and instead pushed the country towards voting literacy tests and other segregation laws.
One of the things that the Ku Klux Klan was very good at during Reconstruction was essentially to convince the world that they did not exist.
For Nash, the tactics of violence and misinformation are the same tactics still being used today, such as in the January 6th insurrection. Eleanor Bryson Forney agrees. She sees the January 6th insurrection as a repeat of that violence.
There is just no surprise. You know, the thing that happened at Washington, that's not a surprise to most of us. What is surprise is no one is being held accountable. It's not a surprise that there's Klansmen, there's still some skinheads around here. I thought they were gone, but they're still here. We know they're here. We know who some of them are. And I thank our last president for his service, because he took the sheets off a lot of them.
She says there was a reason that there weren't many local black people at the Reconcile Silva marches against the Confederate monument in the summer of 2020.
The sad part about it, it's not new, and we knew about it, but our parents, mostly our grandparents, were so protective that they, like I said, they wanted us to, you know, stay in our place.
Forney wants to highlight the everyday racism of name-calling and discrimination that's worked its way into the systems that organize and govern society. That's called systemic racism.
And that's why it's so important that right now to have white people helping us, because I don't think anybody would listen otherwise. You know, the machine of the political machine, I don't think they would listen to just people of color or poor people.
While the violence towards Virgil Bryson isn't surprising for Forney, his prominent place in the community also doesn't come as a shock.
I think it's awesome, and I never doubt it, because I think every era has a powerful black person, and we may not know who they are. Totally, you know, It doesn't surprise me, but it's nice to know. I believe, you know, God puts people, different people in different places at different times. And it's just so nice to know that there was somebody that was bold enough to get out there and got out there as much as they could. I think that is just fantabulous.
While the full history of Virgil Bryson may be unknown, thanks to Forney, McRae, Nash, and others, the history of this region has been documented to help better understand how we got here. I'm Lily Knapp, BPR News.